Update on enforcement program activities. This is a briefing.
The soul mouse is being very.
I'm going to talk to him so he can leave.
Go.
Yeah.
I just wanted your consideration.
Or you can do this.
Please don't.
Or just roll the little thing. Yeah. See this?
But that was before you were. And I wonder what it.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Chairman, Commission members, Director, Deputy Director. As you know, I'm Steve Baer. I'm privileged to serve as the Chief of the Enforcement Program. I've been in this position for about a year and a half now, and I could go on and on about all the great things that are going on in the enforcement program, but today I'm going to limit it to what I think is an important, especially based on the time with the legislative session starting. We're going to focus on our recruitment and retention. As you may or may not know, we had 12 officers who were threatened in our maintain package. Thankfully, they're in the governor's budget, but if something happened to that, we would stand to lose 12 officers this year. And as you'll see further on in the program, that could have great effects on us if that doesn't get funded, as we hope it does. We also had several enhancement packages that could have increased our officer numbers by as much as 21. Out of that number, the enhancement packages that went forward in the governor's budget, there's about 8 in play, from what the finance folks have told me. Some of those numbers are a little tricky, but overall we're looking at about 8. So there's things I'm going to discuss real quick. Some of the changes we made to our entry-level requirements, what our training requirements are, some of the recruitment outreach efforts that we've made in the last year, our current capacity and our the positions that we have filled right now, and what our future goals might be for the program. The type of applicants and the training required. We have two types of applicants. Our new hires, these are folks that have no law enforcement experience at all. They're coming to us with some of them have degrees, some of them have work experience. But they've never done any type of law enforcement work in the past. We've also got our lateral requirements. These are officers who have some type of law enforcement background. They've worked for another agency somewhere. Depending on the level of training that they've had, where they come from, we can put them into play a lot quicker. They go through a much shorter academy, a 2-week equivalency academy, where they learn about laws specific to Washington State, and then we plug them into our training program. The full academy takes about 5 months. Once they do that, we begin an in-house program. If we hire a lateral officer, which last year we hired 3, we try to plug them in right at when another class is ending the academy, so that we do one in-house. We don't have to repeat that. That takes about a month. Following that, we've got about 5 months of FTO training, where they're riding with another officer. They're being taught, and they're also being evaluated during that time. It's the field training and observation program. So two large chunks of time there, and a smaller one. We've got almost a year invested in them by the time they're on independent status. We have a lot of money invested into them at that point. Talked a little bit about some of our requirements that we changed. This wasn't done easily. We didn't want to look at like we were lowering our standards or anything, but we knew we had to be more competitive. Law enforcement agencies across the nation are having a hard time finding people. We're at the same recruiting events as a lot of these other agencies. They come to our table. We tell them go get a four-year degree and we'll look at you. Other agents are saying, come work for us right now, we'll train you and we'll give you all the training that you need. We know that it's important to hire smart officers. Our rules are very complicated. Typically, someone who's got a degree has the level of knowledge through their classwork and education that they're likely to be more successful than someone who hasn't experienced that in life. But we also know there's other areas in life where you can become educated. And I polled the entire officers in our agency to see what they thought about reducing this. There was a lot of great suggestions. Ultimately, where we ended up was we reduced it from a requirement of a four-year degree to having at least 2 years of college coursework, 90 quarter credits in any discipline. The other thing we said is we'll look at you if you've got at least 3 years of natural resource experience, or if you've served in the military for 3 years. That doesn't mean we would hire them, but we would at least look at them, where before we wouldn't even look at them. And I think the reason we decided on the 2 year over the four is I had several people who told me that they worked for the department and they knew that we had the requirement for laterals that they had to have this 2 year degree, so they went and worked on their 2 year degree, but they said, you know, it wasn't as important as some of the things that I learned on the job, and we really feel like we can train people. Thank you. Apologize, I got a frog in my throat. So we settled on this 2 year degree, thinking that if this didn't change our efforts, that we would reevaluate. As you can see, we also changed our visible tattoo policy to more of a discretion, and that was based on kind of a national trend where before we would say you couldn't have any visible tattoos on your body anywhere, or we wouldn't consider you. And what we found is that there's a large group of segment of the population who now feel that officers are more approachable if they've got tattoos, and maybe it's not as offensive to society as it used to be. And we do have officers with tattoos who are visible now, and I haven't taken any complaints or any concerns from the public about that, but we did loosen that up a little bit as well. Yes, sir. We did put a stipulation in there that we would want to evaluate the tattoos before we approved them, and certainly anything like that would be a disqualifier. We'll talk a little bit about some of the recruitment and outreach efforts that we made this past year. We did some really recruitment focused programs. The first one I'll talk about a little bit is the apprentice program. This was kind of born out of us deciding not to do away with the degree requirement, but still requiring at least 2 years of work. I thought about the applicant who came to our table and was interested in our job, and we're telling them, go away, come back when you've got a degree, and we'll talk at you. But we still want to try and give them an opportunity to come work for us. So this apprentice program, we thought, if we could work them in the summertime for a few months, give them a little bit of money for college, help them get on the right course that we want for them to become an officer, that we might be able to influence them a little bit in their career direction in law enforcement to our work. And I'll talk a little bit more about the apprentice program here in a minute. We did a lot of work online through our department Facebook, our enforcement program Facebook, and kind of put out that we were hiring just prior to our big interview cycles, trying to get the word out there that we were looking for applicants. We had officers go back to where they came from and talk about, this is the career path I went, this is what I do now. Talk a little bit about the apprentice program real quick. We're trying to target a group of kids who are just getting out of high school. Had maybe started college or hadn't really made a decision yet what they were going to do in life. We knew they had an interest in law enforcement. We were initially looking at maybe hiring three or four of these positions. We had it open for an open enrollment for about a month, and we had over 200 applicants. And it was difficult to screen 200 applicants when you're looking to only hire a few. We end up interviewing about 50 of those applicants. We end up offering positions to seven. We end up taking one for every one of our regions, and we hired two in Region 4. I don't want to say it was a success, but it was very encouraging to see the numbers of applicants that we got at that level. You know, 1 year I think could be an anomaly. I don't know, but I hope to continue doing this as long as we can afford to do it. We used our vacancy savings from the officer vacancies to fund this program. We didn't have any funding for it by itself, but if we are successful in filling up our officer programs, I'll probably make some type of request to get some funding for a program like this. And I think it would be beneficial for not just enforcement, but other areas of the department as well, to try and introduce people to what it is that our department does. We did an online recruitment effort where we bought an ad on Facebook, which I didn't know you could do before, but you can see the results of this. We ran it for 45 days. It reached over 107,000 people, and it was shared over 800 times. These are the numbers where it was seen and viewed. It's amazing to me how they can track all this down, but I don't know how successful programs like this are, but I think this is part of the future of advertising. This ad cost us less than $100 to run, and we got a huge amount of visibility, much more than we would ever get at a job fair or anything like that. We ran an article in a bilingual newspaper here in the state, just trying to reach a demographic of people that we don't normally interact with. This was a little more expensive than the Facebook ad, but we reached 18,000 online readers, and the print reached 100,000 weekly viewers. This is kind of our hiring efforts over the last few years. You can see that this last year was pretty good for us. We hired 14 people. That's 14 people that we hired and actually sent to the academy. The 2 years prior, we hired nine, but the amazing thing about last year for us is we could have hired a lot more if we could have gotten the academy slots for them. We were restricted by the number of slots we could actually fill in the academy, and luckily the state ran that Spokane Academy, and we were able to throw five people in there at once, which really helps us on our in-house. We were looking at running two in one academy and one in another and then two, and it would have been very expensive for us to run individual in-house training sessions for those small groups. By being able to combine all five of them at once and run one in-house, we're saving a lot of money by doing that, more than the offset of the cost of sending them to Spokane, which was a little bit more expensive than the Burien Academy, but not bad. One thing that's not in this slide that I wanted to talk about a little bit is if we look at 2016, we hired nine. That year we lost 10. In 2017, we hired nine and we lost 11. In 2018, we hired 14. And we lost seven. So I'm going to talk about that just a second, Mr. Chairman. In 16, one of them retired. In 17, four of them retired. In 18, four of them retired. In 16, six of them resigned. 17, six of them resigned, and 18, two of them resigned. In 16, we terminated three, in 17, we terminated one, and then 18, we terminated one. I love to see people retire. I think it's great when they work an entire career and they're able to retire happily and go away and stuff. What I don't like to see is the people who resigned. And I want to ask, why are you leaving? I don't know all the reasons. I know some of the early years they were somewhat unhappy with management. And then there's also a big pay disparity between us and some of our other departments. Our officers work out in these communities. They interact with the other departments a lot. We count on other departments to back us up because, you know, a lot of times our officers are working alone. At the same time, if one of their officers is working alone, they back them up and they get to know each other. And our officers are heavily recruited by the other agencies. And sometimes that's very tempting when they offer cash bonuses. And one of the two officers we lost this year, he got a cash bonus and $20,000 more a year, and that's significant money. I think that overall our officers love the type of work that they do for the department. That's our biggest attraction to recruit new people is the type of work that we do. It's a different area of law enforcement. I think it's the premier law enforcement job, and that's really what enables us to attract and keep some of the best folks who are interested in doing law enforcement work. I think it's important that we maintain the ability to be an attractive employer too, though. We can't fall too far behind, or things like $20,000 a year when someone's raising a family is significant enough money that we'll lose them. And what I talked about before, by the time we've got a couple years into someone and having them trained and spending another officer's time with them, we've got several hundred thousand dollars into them. And to have them walk away, it's a huge loss for us. We've got a lot invested into them at that point. I talked a little bit about it was a good year, and we have people waiting for academies. And next week we've got four coming in to start the Burien Academy. Then we've got three more waiting for the next academy in April. That's what the seven additional waiting for academy is. They've already passed everything. They've passed all the interviews. They've passed the polys and the psych. They've passed the background. We just couldn't get them into an academy quick enough. And we've got eight more people who are in background check and polys and psychs and backgrounds that are still in play. This just kind of goes over those positions that we hired last year. We were able to pick up three laterals from other agencies. Most of them came to us because this is the type of work that they've always wanted to do. Wasn't because we were offering anything special. It was just more of a passion for the type of work that we do. We've got those three that started the academy in November that graduate in March, and we've got one more lateral that's in play right now that we're hoping that if we can bring him on in time, he can start the in-house with that lateral. We'll have four going through in-house in March. This is what our current capacity looks like. We have 98 officers, 7 detectives, 23 sergeants, 10 command staff for a total of 138 as we sit today. That's not counting the ones who are waiting for academy. That's people who are wearing the uniform today. This is what our capacity looks like at 152. That's including the four positions that we were given last year through I-1401 and the whale grant. We got four positions there. We're down two sergeants and two command staff. Those command staff, we haven't filled them because I'm in the process of reclassing them right now, and so it's been kind of a hold up trying to reclass them from captains to lieutenants. That's kind of been a bit of a hold up there. But so if we look at the 10 officer positions that we've got vacant, I've got four of those already assigned to folks. who will be starting academy at the end of this month, and then we've got the three more. So I'm getting down to where we've got just a small amount of officer positions available. It's getting down to where if someone wants a job, I'm going to be offering them forks, because that's about the only thing left. But what does the future look like for the department? Do we want to continue? Department in 2008 paid to have someone come in and do a staffing study to look at how many officers they thought we needed for the mission that we do, and they said we needed 262. They have a long, big, thick document as to why they came up with that. I've been involved in other staffing studies in my other department. It was the same thing. You need a lot more officers. I don't think we need another staffing study to tell us that we need more officers. I think we know we could always use more officers. You know, we're out there 365 days a year. We're available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Kind of the face of the agency a lot of times because of that. When people have a question about something and they see an officer, it's like, I've been meaning to ask someone from the department, and they go over and hit us up. And I say 365 days a year. We aren't always scheduled for that, but a lot of the officers will go out there at times when they think no one's expecting them. And I just saw something the other day where one of the officers was working on Christmas Day. They found some violations, and the people told them, yeah, we didn't expect to see anybody out here today. So I think they're pretty good, and I think they enjoy that flexibility that comes with the job that we give them to be flexible with their schedule and try and figure out when they can be the most effective. So I think at some point it's going to depend on what happens with the budget this year. Obviously, if we lose 12 positions, we've got more people in play right now. I'm going to have to tell some of those folks to go away that we've already got waiting for academy. If we're able to maintain the governor's budget and actually get more, we've got some room for growth, but not a lot. And we would more than fill up the vacancies that we have within 6 months in the trend that we're on right now. So one of the things I think that we as a department need to do is have a talk about, you know, where do we go in the future? Do we have a plan for reasonable growth? We haven't, because we haven't been able to fill them for a while, but if we continue, I think that's a discussion we need to have. We need to talk about what responsibilities do we want our officers to handle. I've got some, our one detachment up in the northeast corner of the state where they spend an awful lot of time doing depredation stuff. We're not doing a lot of what we would consider game warden or policing work, because we're busy doing that. And if that continues to be a huge draw on our officers, I think we need to look at, is that the right person to do that type of work when we're looking at animal-on-animal attacks? Is that something that we should have law enforcement spend a lot of time on? Because it's a huge time drain. And when they're doing that, no one's out there doing the checks that we would expect them to be doing. I think we need to stay competitive as an employer and try and stop the loss. It's very expensive when we lose an officer to another agency like that. We lose a lot. We lose a lot of money, a lot of training and experience that goes out the door with that. I think that you should be aware that the officers and the sergeants' unions have proposed legislation this year to try and get them out of their coalition that their unions are in for bargaining purposes. The coalition that they're in they're in that coalition because of the size of their union. It's not because of their job duties. They're the only law enforcement agency within that coalition. And they feel like they're restricted in what they can obtain through the bargaining process, because they feel like the other side would have to give it to everyone if they gave it to them. And so they feel like they're watching their salaries and benefits get depleted as other law enforcement agencies grow, because they're tied to this coalition. So they're making a push to do that. So you may hear some of that in talks with legislators too. I certainly think it's important that we continue with programs like the apprenticeship program in the future. I think that that's got a lot of potential to feed and grow our own officers. And I think we're our own best recruiters when people ride with us and see the work that we do. I think most of them will see what kind of people in law enforcement we are. I think law enforcement gets painted with a broad brush. It's been in the news a lot lately on incidents all around the nation. And we get identified, like every other law enforcement agency does, by the bad acts of a few officers, and sometimes not even the bad acts of a few officers. Sometimes it's just the division of the country, and the officers get kind of pinned between those. If you look at the riots, who's often there to quell that's the police, and the police get painted as kind of the opposing side sometimes. So I think the more time we can spend with young people, showing them what it is we do and what it is that we're like, they can come to their own conclusions, whether they want to be a part of it or not. And it's my position, this is probably one of the greatest honors I get to do, is swear in the new officers and give them their oath of office. And this is the three laterals and the one officer that graduated from BLIA that they just got off their FTO training. Officer Miller just finished up two weeks ago. He was the last one because he had to go to the two-week lateral because he had been out of law enforcement for a long enough time that he had to do the two-week academy. But all four of them are from Washington State. Just great, great officers, great additions to our program. So, thank you for your time. That's all I have, Commissioner.
In the job that you're doing, and I've had the opportunity to spend some car time and boat time with officers in Region 4, and I learn a lot, and I learn to respect them and how they handle themselves in the field. Sometimes it takes a lot of biting of the tongue, but I've seen how they've done it. So great, great folks. Yes.
Thank you. I had the opportunity to meet Chief pretty early in your arrival, and we had a great discussion. He recognized recruitment and retention is a real concern for his area, and was already brainstorming these fabulous ideas, and I'm so pleased to see a lot of them come to fruition and actually seem to be working very well. Quick question. So we have the apprentice program, and you talked about the investment in training and even just in time. Have we given thought, if we are fortunate enough to capture some of those apprentices in the future, how's that going to impact training? Is it going to, are we going to be able to maybe lessen that a little bit and save on cost of both in time and money?
Thank you, Commissioner Thorburn, through the chair. I haven't considered that, actually. And our in-house training, it goes over a variety of things that are specific to fish and wildlife. We have different agency personnel come in and talk about the different agency programs, things that they aren't exposed to at the police academy. And I think even if we picked up apprentices who had been exposed to that during the ride-along system, it would probably be a great refresher, because it's probably going to be a significant amount of time from when they were exposed to that. And as you all know, our regulations change all the time. There's always something new coming in. So it's unfortunate that we have such a long training period, and it's expensive. But it's not unlike most training with any other police department. In fact, there's many who do much more. Some require up to 2 years of training. In other countries, especially Britain and that, they do several years of FTO where they work side by side with officers. We could look at what we provide them, but I don't see it really saving us any money there. But I do think there's a lot of value in that apprenticeship program and trying to influence people who aren't quite sure what they want to do yet and show them what it is that we do and what a great career field it is.
Mr. Grayville?
Just a comment, Chief. And to the other commissioners, you mentioned that you're often the face of the agency, and I want to emphasize how true that is. I spent a lot of time in the field just doing what I do, And so I've been able to interact with enforcement officers for many years. And one of the things I've noted is there is a change in the type of character that is represented by the agency. Society has changed, and the types of people that we put in the field has changed with that. You mentioned the tattoos as an example, but also just the demeanor of the officers. There's really good realization that when they speak to an officer, they're speaking to the agency, the department. And there is sensitivity to that, and I appreciate the approach that your officers use and the quality of the officers that I've had the opportunity to interact with is first rate. So thank you very much for the job you're doing.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Yeah.
Commissioner McKaysey.
Thanks very much, Chief Bear, for the presentation. Under your previous slide of future considerations for work, I just want to say from my perspective, I would loudly endorse all of that thinking that you've put into that slide and agree completely with Commissioner Thorburn of the importance of the apprenticeship program mutually. There's no better way to start on this than starting at the bottom, from my perspective. And it lets you see them, but it also lets them see whether it's going to work or not. My question has to do with your recruitment. You had two slides where you went out and kind of went modern now on some of the recruitment business online, many, a big number. I wondered if you had if you got any applications submitted from that Facebook endeavor or that bilingual paper endeavor.
Thank you, Commissioner McIsaac, through the chair. We've been talking to Becky Bennett because she's the one who brainstormed that Facebook thing, and she's been bugging me that we don't capture from folks when we're interviewing them, how did you find out about us? So that's something that's on our
list. Send to Becky, you know that.
Yeah.
So, no, sir, we have not captured that data, but I would agree that's something that we've as oversight on my part, that we should ask that question and maybe try and elaborate more where we are successful or not. But
thanks, Chair. Chief, can I get you to back up one slide? And I think it's number four. We need to take a hard look at the department and what responsibilities. This was a deal that, and this was before Kelly's tenure, we had a mountain lion hanging out in the city of Pullman. And it was on the radio. I had calls on it. When I started calling up the food chain, to me it was a no-brainer that Joey would go deal with it. Well, no, this became an enforcement issue. And you saying that you really don't want this, to me it was a huge deal when conflict went from enforcement back to wildlife. It made a lot more sense to me. And I thought we'd had it taken care of, and then once this thing came about, it was just, you want to go beat your head against a wall. And just to back up what you're saying, I think there's still probably some kinks in the situation a little bit. And it, because an officer, there was no officer available, and like I said, with the proximity with a mountain lion in between the grade school and the junior high, finally I just told Pizanger, I said, I don't care, just send somebody there with their lab to lead it around, look like you're doing something, you know. And just to back up what you're saying, because this was a real life situation, and it was, the timing was off, but still, we've got guys that are really good at conflict stuff, so why not avail ourselves to them? So,
sir, I, in looking at some of our policies, some of our responses that require officers based on the species of animal instead of the animal behavior, and I think maybe we could look at that. We've got every big game animal listed as a dangerous animal except for
humans,
goats and sheep, I think, and actually, any animal could be dangerous if it's exhibiting the wrong behavior. But I know in King County, I met with a sergeant from King County the other day, and they responded over 900 bear calls in King County. And some of these are, there's a bear in my backyard getting in my bird feeder, and somebody needs to go to that call. Somebody needs to interact with the public. They expect something from us, but I don't know that we have department staff available in some of these areas, and so we end up sending an officer. I don't know that we have the number of officers as the population continues to grow and more of the population grows out into rural areas and they become urban and the bears are used to traversing through there and we have more of these interactions. I think we need to evaluate who do we send on a call like that. Now, if there's a bear that's acting aggressively towards pets or animals, it probably makes sense to send an officer to try and capture it or deal with it because we have more tools available than a lot of our biologists do. But on some of these calls with wildlife, I think we could have someone else be the first level to try and educate people. Okay, there's certain times of the year you might want to take down your bird feeders just to have that interaction. But I think we as a department know that somebody needs to go make that interaction with the public when they request service from us. It's just determining who's the right one. Sometimes we're the only ones on duty too. If it's a weekend call, typically enforcement's the only one on. So, I don't know that we'll have a quick answer like that, especially with shortage of personnel in all departments. And I don't think any of the programs want to take on any more than they already have. But,
Mr. Baker.
I told myself I wasn't going to speak today, but I am going to make 2 points. One is that my projection is that as you stay in this position for the next, hopefully, while, you will see your recruitment needs narrow and the demand for those jobs increase. Part of that is because of you, and so I really do want to appreciate that you're willing to come down from Alaska and take this job. The reasons we certainly don't want to go into them, but your office generally, there was some pretty ugly turmoil there for the last few years, both internally and externally, and I heard a lot about it, much more than I wanted to, and I just want to say that the outside reaction to you is, and your management style, this isn't personal, is stellar so far. So we're going to see increases in people wanting these jobs. On that, I think we've all been in management positions. I probably agree that you don't need another staffing survey. You know what our needs are. That's your job to know that. However, there are times when you might want to commission a salary survey, because if we aren't staying competitive, we need to know. And the guy at the end of the table here needs to know. They're pretty easy and they're pretty cheap. So that's just a suggestion, certainly not anything I'm asking on behalf of the commission or anything like that. But they're very, very useful when you get to having FTE bleed due to salaries.
Thank you, Commissioner Baker, through the chair. I will say that the deputy director and I and the director have talked about this, and I know they're both supportive. I think part of the reason that we saw such a low turnover this last year is officers love this work. That's what attracted them. That's what attracted me to this job is the work that this department does. There were other job opportunities available to me when I applied for this job, but this, the same reason that the officers apply for this is what brought me here. I love the mission of this department. And I know that the officers want to stay here if they can, and I'm confident that a lot of them are waiting to see what direction the department takes the next year or so with the new director, and they're happy, they're excited. So thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.